Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. I really can't find words to express my excitement about this morning and having my dear, dear, dear friend Marilyn Wood with us on the Next Chapter series. She has written so many phenomenal chapters in her life and impacted so many people in their lives. So it's just awesome. I knew Marilyn before I had gray hair. And if you know me, I do have gray hair under the dye. Okay. She has loved me, accepted me, and been a powerful role model in my professional life, but also, and probably more importantly, in my faith walk and in my spiritual life. So welcome, Marilyn Wood.
Thank you so much. You're just too kind, but it's a ditto back to you, because I remember when I first met you and how we just hit it off just right from the start. And also, for me, I've learned so much from you along the way, and you have shared my journey in so many ways. And we know what those are. Mission matters.
That's right. Mission matters. We are blessed to have been connected.
Yes, we are.
I don't know quite where we should start, because it is such an interesting story, but I think I want to start by your most recent work before you retired. You founded Opus Senior Services Group. Opus Management Resources is what it started out as, and Alpha Physician Services, and Sigma Link, which is a PT, a physical therapy company. Mm-hmm. Our dear Opus was born in 2003. Is that right?
May of 2003.
Yeah, May of 2003. Let's talk about how and why that happened. Because you took a huge risk. You risked your personal finances, your reputation. You risked everything to start a company at a time when there were a gazillion nursing homes already on the landscape and in Florida. So let's talk about that. What gave you the confidence to take that risk?
Well, to begin with, I was working for Genesis Healthcare at the time, and I was the president of their Southern region. Which incorporated, when I first started that role, it was about 32 centers. And then over time, they sold some of those properties, and then we were down to basically the properties that were left in Florida. And to be quite honest, it really wasn't something that I wanted to embark upon. I was very happy in my role. I was in my early 50s. My children had just gotten married, and I could see grandchildren on the horizon. And I just thought, you know, this is perfect for me, right? To just kind of coast my way through. And I loved working for Genesis. I had great friends there and great partners. However, Rob Rabel, who was the financial controller in the Southern region, he was an entrepreneur all the way through. And he was much younger than me, about 12 to 15 years. And of course, he had a young family, and he could see that potentially Genesis was going to exit Florida, and that would put us all looking for jobs, right? And so he came to me and said, I think this is our opportunity. An opportunity to start our own business. And I was like, are you crazy? I didn't want to do that. I was like, you know, Florida was still a very litigious state, highly regulated. And I know the business very well. It's very, very tight financially, you know, for you to be successful and to do it the way I wanted to do it. And so I was very adversarial to him in the beginning about doing this. And so he, in his shrewdness, he would go around and talk to people that were close to me and say, I think you need to work on Marilyn. I think you need to talk to her. This is a great idea, you know, for us to do this. And so friends like Lucy Meyer, you know, she would kind of like poke me along. And then Dion Senna, we went to dinner one night and they laid out all this financial information. And I looked at both of them and said, this is a setup, isn't it? This is a setup. And they both just rudely laughed. And I remember walking out to the parking lot with both of them, Rob and Dion. And I said, okay, I said, I get the message now. You've been, poking me for a while. So I'm going to pray about it and see if God really wants me to pursue this. And they both go, we knew you were going to say that. And I said, well, it is what I need to do. You know, I hear all of the earthly reasons I should do it, but I really need to see if this is what God wants me to do. So I agreed to do it, even though I said to Rob, I don't really believe Genesis is going to agree to this, because we were all working for Genesis at the time. And Rob said, oh, well, you go up there and you pitch this idea that if they sell these centers, ultimately, we can become the management organization for them. And since we're already in place, we know the centers, it would just make a great transition. So I said, okay, I'll go up to Philadelphia and I'll pitch it. And I was actually pitching it to an interim CEO at the time who really didn't know very much about us. And so it was kind of amazing. And so I go up there and I pitch it to him. And he says to me, after I kind of talk it through, he goes, well, why don't you go back and seek legal advice and potentially explore the opportunity? I was floored. I literally was floored. I was just like, are you kidding me? And of course, I call Rob and he goes, I knew you could do it. I knew you could do it. And I went, I haven't done anything yet. this is going to be a long road, right? But so for a year while we were working for Genesis, and so I have to give so much credit to Genesis, to George Hager, who then was the chief financial officer, and so many people there at Genesis, Dave Barr, there were so many people that helped us. And they actually, long story short, they did sell the physical plants to an investor. And then we set up our own organization, Opus Management Resources, to become the manager. And we signed a long-term lease. So we actually leased the properties and we became the manager. Now, of course, the manager takes on all the responsibility. We pay everybody. We have the liability. Everything falls back on the manager ultimately. But so on May 1st, 2023, and that was a very long year trying to set it all up and continue to work for my employer, Genesis, and do the job for them. But God enabled us. And so we were able May 1st to sign the agreement and to start our own organization. Now, I have to tell a funny story because Rob was the financial person, right? And so before we go to Philadelphia to sign the papers, he shows me spreadsheets. Now, I'm an operator and he's the financial person. And he says, I want to show you these spreadsheets before we go up there so you can read them and see what I want you to see. And so I'm looking at them, reading them. And I went, oh, I said, well, it looks like right here, we might have a shortfall on payroll. Right, maybe early into the first few months. And he went, yeah, that's right. That's what it looks like. And I went, okay. He said, but I'm going to take care of it. You don't need to worry about it. We'll have it covered. But I wanted you to know, as the potential new CEO, I'm not going to keep anything from you, that we're in this together and that we ultimately we'll make it work, but I'm not going to hide anything from you before we go up there to sign papers. So, from that point, Rob and I were just a team. Now we had another partner at the time. There was three of us, which ultimately we purchased her interest out in 2008. But from that point on, Rob and I were just a team. And I was just so glad that he encouraged me and that we did it because it really impacted my life and so many other people's lives because of his spirit and his willingness to really take the risk.
Marilyn, will you explain what a nursing home management company is? Because I think that people probably don't quite get that, and they don't quite get the risk of being the nursing home management company.
Well, a friend of mine, I also had run nursing homes, and she and I used to say to each other, I think people just think that we just sit back and people are just sitting in rocking chairs and rocking on the front porch eating bonbons. But that's not what goes on. I say a nursing home, first of all, is like a city, and it provides all the functions for everyone that lives in that center. Everything from their post office to their restaurant to their church, to their medical facilities, to their finances, to their social life, to their activities. Everything goes on under that building, and it's provided for them, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days. So it's just like a full-blown city, and probably up to 500 to maybe, I'd say, 1,000 people go in and out of that center every single day, between all the family members and all the service providers, everything that goes on. It's just amazing if you think about it, in that one center, what goes on a given day. And so the operating company is the backbone of all of that. So it employs all the staff members. It engages all the vendors, service providers. It provides the payroll. It has to adhere all to labor laws, employment, workers' compensation. You have to have property tax. You have to have employment tax. You have to have wind coverage, flood coverage. Everything that you would provide for your property, we had to do that. Not the owner, because we're leasing the property. So when we lease it, then ultimately we just pay them a monthly lease, like an apartment. We're just paying them for the use of that building. And then we ultimately provide all the operations that go on in that property, down to all the meals, everything that is provided. It is a very, very complicated business, more complicated than anything you can imagine. And at the same time, we are being scrutinized and overseen, which we need to have supervision. I'm not saying we shouldn't. Everyone does, right? We have to adhere to federal guidelines and to state guidelines. And whichever one of those guidelines is higher than the other, that's the one we have to adhere to. And so we've always known that we have more regulations than even a nuclear power plant, a nursing home does. It's very, very complicated. So you have to be, you have to really be on your toes to understand the business, the regulatory part, and a business. You know, it's a business. At the same time, it's a people business, you know, and that has to always be the center and the core of it. The business has to support what we're trying to do. Which what we're trying to do is to give the best care we could possibly do to seniors.
And not even just seniors, because think about all the people who came for rehab.
Yes, or even family members. I mean, we're supporting family members. We're supporting team members. We're supporting their family. I mean, it's a combination of many, many lives that are being touched every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a big risk. You had Rob. I can still see his face clear as day. You had him to kind of bolster you on. In the early, early days, what did you learn in the early years of Opus?
In the early years, I think I learned that I didn't need to be afraid every time there was a problem. I needed to rely on all those wonderful people, tenured people that worked with me, that all had expertise in each one of those areas that I didn't have, of course. And so I learned that I needed to delegate more, because I tend to want to oversee everything, keep my finger on everything. I think if you interviewed some of my key staff, they would probably say that about me, as Marilyn was always had her finger on the pulse of everything. And so I had to learn how to delegate more. And then I also had to learn how to trust, you know, trust that ultimately God had the plan, you know, and when there were difficult bumps along the way, which there were, I had to trust that God was going to take care of it. I think also I had to learn that I didn't have to be the expert of everything. I didn't have to, because I think going into it, I thought, oh, you know, I've never really actually operated a business. I mean, I had been an nursing home administrator, which I think they operate a business, but not at the level, you know, that I was embarking upon. So I think those early days taught me delegation, trust, have confidence in other people. And I certainly was on my knees a lot, a whole lot more probably in those early days.
Thinking about those lessons, which one of them was the most impactful?
Well, definitely my reliance on God, because definitely as the years went by, there were more challenges, as you know, the loss of Rob, definitely COVID, lawsuits, loss of key staff. So there was, you know, those kinds of things really showed me that, okay, this is not going to necessarily be easy, you know, but Marilyn, I'm going to be with you. And so when those days would come, particularly or any day, I would get up every morning and say, okay, Lord, whatever the day holds today, then give me peace. Because you never know, a surveyor is going to pop in any given center on any given day. And it could be a very, very traumatic day, just based on a small thing, or it could be a big thing. There have been big things that were shot our way. And so I had to rely on God. I had to.
So what did you do to distinguish Opus in the marketplace, to set Opus apart from all the other nursing homes? And you had a boatload of competitors in Florida in each of your markets across the state. So what was it that you did to make Opus different?
Yeah, well, you know what that was. Of course, Rob was a business mind, but I was the person that was looking at the operation every day and the care that we were giving. And I, like I say, I've been in the business a long time. Even prior to Opus, I'd worked for Genesis, Meridian Healthcare. I'd worked nonprofits. I had actually overseen centers in 15 different states over my career. So I had been around the block, right? And so I just sensed in a nursing center, you employ team members at all different levels of education, vocation. They're coming from all different levels. So you have physicians, you have doctorates and master degrees, all the way down to people that have eighth grade education. And so you're trying to get all these people to the same level of understanding about how you want them to go about doing their job, because they all talk different languages and they all talk it at different levels. And so I started talking with you, especially with you and with Pam Karubi. And we started talking about what can we do? You know, we got to have a singular message that everyone can understand. And then we build everything around that message so that whenever something goes right or wrong, we use that message to give praise and commendation. And also we use it to give constructive feedback. That's what I like to call it, rather than discipline, constructive feedback, right? And so what we developed was our mission statement. And our mission statement incorporated, you know, the items of caring for our residents, caring for our team members, listening, compassionate care, all of those words. And I remember saying to Rob, now we're going to have a mission and we're going to build everything around the mission. He was, at first he was kind of like, okay, you go do your mission. I'm working on the finances, right? And I was like, no, Rob, that's not how it's going to work. We're all going to be Rob around the mission. And of course, like I say, Joanne, you were so involved in that with me, because then we were trying to come up with like, how are we going to have something like a tagline, you know, that we can just like put our teeth into it. I remember, I think you emailed me like somewhere in the middle of the night, you kind of came to you and you said, what about, and of course now, you know, a lot of people kind of use what we kind of started with many, many years ago, but you said, what about mission matters? And I was like, wow, that's it. Mission matters. Because then that just became everything when we talked about to our team members about their work, about their attitudes, about how they spoke. And that included people that were doctors all the way down to the eighth grade. We could say everyone could understand mission matters and everyone could understand the mission. And so I think that really is what distinguished us. And I have subsequently got a lot of feedback from many people in the business that said that really was what distinguished us, that they remember that. They still remember Mission Matters. Yeah, I mean, I think if you ask people that were in the business at the time we were in the business, because there's a lot of newcomers now, of course, if you say Mission Matters, they go, oh, that's Opus. That's Opus. And they would say immediately that was us. So I would go on the road and I would do coaching sessions with team members and talk to them about Mission. I would do it because Joanna and I talked about how important it was. It has to be a message that's pushed down from the top. I think many organizations have mission statements. And I mean, I think all organizations probably have mission statements, but then do they really live by it? And does the CEO continually endorse it, discuss it, talk about it? And so One other portion about that I think I overlooked was that we talked about having mission stories. And mission stories, they're the backbone really of it, because what we say is that a story, any kind of story that you hear, be it a movie or a book, it ejects emotion, right? Emotion comes from stories. And then that emotion then helps the person to comprehend what you're trying to convey. So, for example, you say somebody's walking down the hall and they don't answer the call light, which is the ongoing kind of thing in their nursing center, is answering call lights. You know, always encouraging people, because that's what people complain a lot about, is they didn't answer my call light on time. And so, if someone walks by the call light, then you pull them aside and you say to them, and this is, I'm kind of jumping all around here, but you kind of say to them, you know, the most important thing in our mission is, you know, is that we are compassionate and caring, and that we want our residents to feel compassionate and cared for. And it's very important to them that when they need help and you answer the light timely, that that's evoking what our mission is trying to say. And so then when you go into morning meeting, you use that as a story, you know, to somewhat kind of talk about how we can talk to people about our mission statement and how it helps people to understand what we're trying to convey. Or a mission story could be when a team member comes in and starts telling you about a resident's family came in about their bill, and then how you helped them, and you explained the bill to them, and how when they left, they said, "Thank you so much for taking the time and explaining all the details of that to me. I never would have understood it." And then you tell that mission story about how that business office manager was so compassionate and caring about helping this family member. And again, that story helps someone else to understand, oh, so compassion is directly related to taking time, answering lights, helping family members to understand the bill. And so it's not just a word. Then it becomes an experience, you know, an
Yes.
experience that
Yes.
people can identify with. And again, who are we trying to get identified? The doctorate down to the eighth grade. And they all understand that. They all can hear that emotion, feel it, and understand it. And so that really, I think, set us apart. Because when I coached to the mission, I would use all these stories and examples. We had all kind of a requirement that every meeting would begin with a mission story. Anytime they had a department head meeting or they had a staff meeting, it would always start, someone had to share a mission story. And just recently, I sent a Christmas card to one of our defense council members. And at our OPUS reunion last year, I think I had asked all of them to write a little something that they remembered. So in my Christmas card that she sent back to me, she said, "I didn't really get an opportunity to write down what I remembered the most, but I'm going to write it in this Christmas card. And the one thing I remember is the requirement to always tell a mission story." And she says, "And you were relentless." She said, "You didn't mind the silence. You just sat there and waited until they all came up with their mission story." And so I just had a little chuckle, you know. Or I would say to them, "Okay, well then what we're going to do, since no one's offering a mission story, I'm going to start right here to the right of me, and we're going to go all the way around the room, and everyone's going to tell a mission story." But you know what was so good about that is by the time we got to the 20th mission story, we were all either laughing or crying, or it was just amazing, because again, the emotion of every one of those stories was just incredible. I mean, it was incredible. I can still hear them. I can still hear them to this day. So
You
that
know,
was what set us apart.
seeing the stories when we were all together this summer,
Yes.
seeing them written just brought back so many wonderful, wonderful memories. And one of the things that I remember from seeing them again is that the mission stories were not all about how the team members interacted externally, like with families or with the customers or with vendors. A lot of the mission stories were about the love they showed each other.
Yes.
And that just, I don't know, that means so much because in so many work environments, there's this whole, outward facing, we
Yes.
got to do well by the customer, by the shareholder, by everybody else. But if you're not doing well by one another,
Right.
then you're not living your mission. Exactly. You're not. And so that's something that I remember, and seeing so many of the stories and seeing how people just loved each other and cared for each other. Yeah.
Right.
So how'd you define success and how'd you measure it?
Success was definitely giving the best mission-oriented quality care we could possibly give to our customers, as well as to our team members and family members. I always saw it as a combination of all of that. And so, if we could, some organizations, or particularly nursing centers, because that's what I know, they would say, "Oh, we got the best 5-star, or we got the best, survey." And certainly all that's very important. But for me, it was definitely, customers that would say, "Oh, you guys went the extra mile for me, or you all are, you really care about what you're doing. I see it in your team members." Like if I would go and walk around the halls and families would stop me, or team members would stop me, and I wanted to make it a point that I wanted them to all know me as Marilyn, and we walked in and they said, "Oh, Marilyn, I want to tell you about what happened the other day." And I mean, for me, that was success. Now, certainly it was important that we were financially solvent, and of
Yes.
course, but I always said, and build it, they will come, right? Build it, they will come. So we built an organization around our mission. And then it was amazing how financially stable we were. And Rob even expressed a lot of that, in his final days, when he was when he had cancer. And he said to me, "Marilyn, now I understand," because he was on the other side and he could see what how important it was for the people that were caring for him to be compassionate and caring. So for me, success was the feedback from the customers, the team members, the family members about how they enjoyed coming to work, and how they enjoyed working there, and how we they were treated, how they were treated with care and with fairness, and that people were willing to listen to them. They may not have always liked the message that was given back to them, but at least they were heard. So for me, that was success. That truly was success. I loved it. I loved what I did. I mean, it was just the highlight of my life was those 15, 18 years with Opus. It was wonderful.
You know, that's one of the highlights of my life too. Very few people get to have a consulting client that becomes a part of their life, their world, their family. So that was such a blessing for me.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I still have a like our decorator designer. She's actually now moved to Kentucky, but she actually says the same thing to me. Marilyn, those were just, I can remember driving up to the center thinking, "Oh, it's going to be a wonderful day today." She just loved being part of the organization, even though she was a consultant. I mean, she was an outsider provider, so that to me, that was success.
But there were some other successes that I think were notable, like getting the Governor's Gold Seal Award
Oh, yes.
multiple times in Florida. I mean, the Governor's Gold Seal Award is coveted. Being in that American Healthcare Association top 50 nursing homes in the United States, I think those are pretty major successes as well.
Yeah, I don't
So.
disagree. I just guess I don't focus, on all of the medals and recognition. But, since you brought it up, I can remember saying to Mary, "I want to get the Governor's Gold Seal." And of course, as you said, that was a very, very prestigious award, as well as a very difficult award to attain, because not very few had attained it at the time. And so Mary said, "Okay," and she also this made it her mission that she was going to help us attain that. And so I have to say, that we did receive the Governor's Gold Seal, one of the first Governor's Gold Seal at Tierra Bonds in the state. And then also our Hans Leitch Center received the first prestigious gold seal in at American healthcare. So I was just like, I look back on all of those recognitions as just, again, part of the big picture. It's part of the big picture of those things. Certainly were accolades that showed our commitment and dedication to what we were trying to do, but it really was the day-to-day work, the day-to-day work and the day-to-day impacts and conversations, with people.
I'm going to come back to Opus in just a bit, but I want to talk now about your upbringing and your early career, because you come from a teeny tiny city in North Carolina. Did you ever imagine in coming up that you'd hold executive roles in senior care and own a company as successful as Opus?
Never in my wildest dreams. I was not a very studious student. I've always been real social, I was real social. I was a cheerleader in clubs and all of that, And in fact, I think probably a lot of my high schooler friends would probably say, "What? Marilyn Gordon did what?" It probably would have been something they couldn't even fathom. And then, of course, choosing my nursing career at the time when I graduated from high school, which was in 1968, there weren't a lot of careers for women, mainly teacher, maybe a secretary or nurse, right? That's about the three that were options. And my mother was a secretary. She had been that her whole life. But I had classmates in high school that were going to be nurses. And so I thought, oh, okay, well, I like to help people. And so maybe that's a good thing for me to do. Now, my dad did not want me to be a nurse. He saw that as a very, just a low job from his perspective. He just didn't want me to do that. However, my mother intervened and she supported me. And so I selected a diploma school in High Point, North Carolina. And there were several other ladies that I graduated with. They also went there. And so that's where I went to school. And I had no idea, even getting into nursing, what it was about. I mean, because here I was 18 years old, and right out of the gate, I'm on the floor of a hospital at 6 o'clock in the morning, dressed in my little white uniform. And I'm like, what have I got myself into? I mean, truly. And that diploma program is jam-packed. I mean, you're taking classes, then you're on the floor at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're working the floor, you have patients to take care of. Then at night, you're like, and I didn't think I was the smartest person on the face of the earth, but the Lord again provided me with good roommates who were very studious and helped me along the way. Because we started out with a fairly large group of young ladies starting our course. I think I don't remember how many of us. There was at least 30 or maybe more of us. Only 17 of us graduated. And they actually eliminated a significant number of us after the first freshman year. So after I got out of nursing school, I decided that I loved long-term care. And I loved long-term care for many reasons. My maternal grandparents were very, very significant in my life. I can still see them today. And they helped a lot in terms of helping me just love older people. And I loved them up until the day they were all gone. My grandmother, I can still hear her laughing, and she always encouraged me, always encouraged me. And anything that I, when I failed or I didn't fail or I didn't do well, I could just pick up the phone and call my grandmother, and she would be like, "It's okay, sweetie. It's all right, honey." I could still hear her. And anything if I needed something, she would do her best to try to help provide it for me. And my grandfather the same. So they really were kind of like the core of older people are wonderful people, aren't they? And so then when I was in nursing school, I would just gravitate to taking care of seniors. I love the medical surge floor. I love taking care of older people. My classmates in nursing school thought I was crazy. None of them cared for taking care of old people. They all went into specialty work, like OB or peds or surgery, all did specialties. And even after we had our reunion many years later, they were like, "Are you still doing this?" I mean, like, I'm like, yeah, I love it. And what I would do in nursing school, I would actually, if I had a senior, and they would get transferred to a nursing home, I would go out to the nursing home to see them. And in those days, the nursing homes were run very, very loosely. And I remember going to the nursing homes and I'd be looking for linen because I would want to clean them up and give them baths. I'm just like a visitor coming in, but I was just a school student nurse. But I would follow them all out to the nursing homes. And so then in my senior year of nursing, I actually got a full-time job, not a full-time job, but I got a weekend job. So when I was off on the weekends from nursing school, I would go and work in a nursing home on Saturday and Sunday. So I just was attracted to their stories, their wisdom, and I just felt that our society had just pushed them aside. and really didn't see them as valuable because my grandmother showed me how valuable they were. And so I wanted to do something that would help other people to see their value and value them as much as I think our society should value them, right? And so that's kind of like, that's kind of how I got into it, And so then to get back to your question about being a CEO, I never envisioned that. I mean, of course, when I started working as a, I got my administrator's license while I was in North Carolina. And then again, it's a kind of a lot of stories, but when we moved to Florida, that was kind of a very challenging time for us because I had been working for a gentleman that actually owned centers in North Carolina. And so I guess I did have a little entrepreneur spirit. And so I said to him one day, I said, if you ever decide that you want to sell any of these properties, I'd like to see if I could buy one. And then I could just have my own nursing center and I could operate it myself. And he said, well, yes, he would do that. He would do that. So I was really excited about that. He had properties like in Mississippi, Tennessee, North Carolina, and I traveled and did work for him for about a year. And then one day I came to the office and he told me that he'd sold everything. He'd sold the entire business. And I said, oh, so that meant everything? And he went, yes, everything. So I was very, very defeated. But again, the Lord always, taps me on the shoulder and he says, it's okay, get up. I got another plan for you. And so that's when Bob and I picked up our family in 1987 and moved to Florida. I really had decided to get out of long-term care. I was so kind of depressed by the whole thing because I really love long-term care. I thought this is what I'm supposed to do, right? And we never planned to leave High Point, Greensboro area ever. That was where Bob and I grew up. It's where our families were. We were never going to leave there ever. But I think just because I was so just overwhelmed with depression and a little self-pity. And lots of people don't just pick up their whole family and move when they have depression and self-pity. But again, another God intervention, when I was at church one day, this lady said, I hear you're thinking about moving to Florida. And I said, yeah, we are. And she said, well, I know exactly where you need to go. And I went, oh, you do? She said, yes, you need to go to Lakeland, Florida. And she said, and you need to look up this person, and they'll, and she said, but that I feel that's where you need to go. So I was just like, okay, thank you. And then the next week, she actually sent me a postcard in the mail. And she said, Marilyn, I've been praying about this and I feel impressed. You need to go to Lakeland, Florida. I was like, okay. And so I started interviewing for jobs. And I got a job in Winter Haven as a administrator of a home health agency, assistant administrator of a home health agency. And we bought a house in Lakeland. Bob didn't have a job. We didn't have any. We were just kind of like living by faith, literally. Our house was still in High Point. We moved our three children who were like from 13 to 7 years of age, and which are key times in their lives, right? But we moved, and Bob got a job teaching, which he is a teacher, 2 weeks before school started in Auburndale, and he taught there for almost 30 years, and or 25 years. And then one day he comes home and he goes, I think they're building a nursing home about a quarter of a mile up here the road here. And I went, no, they're not. And he and I get in the car and we drive up the street a quarter of a mile, and there's a man on a tractor. And he's like plowing the ground, and he goes, and so he gets off the tractor, and Bob goes, they had a little sign set out front, like about, just like 5 by 10 or whatever, and it said nursing home. And he said, what are you building here? And he walked over to his truck and he pulled out the plans. He says, well, it looks like they're building their nursing home here. And I went, are you kidding me? And so I took the name of the company and the name of the architect, and I called them, and that's why I got back into long-term care in Florida, because then I actually opened that building and became the first administrator there and worked there for like 7 years. And so then it just went from there, from there it just I then I became I was working for Meridian Healthcare then. Then they promoted me. And then they sold to Genesis, and then they promoted me. So it was like along the way, I was promoted in various aspects along my career. And then I met Rob. And then you've got that story because then Rob said it's time to start a business. I always said it was really funny because Rob was such a distinguished, classy graduate of, you know, very prestigious university in the North, and his father was a lawyer in D.C., and he hooks up with this little Southern girl out of North Carolina, and we get together, and then the two of us were just the best of friends. You know, it was amazing.
That was amazing. Who were your mentors?
Oh, I had some wonderful mentors. Of course, in those first years when I worked at, right when Bob got out of college, he was drafted, because that's during the Vietnam years. And as soon as he graduated from college, he had a lottery number, and it was like 50. So he got drafted, and he went into the Navy. And so he was gone for 3 years. Bob was gone for 3 years. And so I found this nursing home there in North Carolina. It was a nonprofit operated by the Wesleyan Church. And I was a nurse on the floor working there. And I met Linda Howard, who was the director of nursing. And then I met Reverend Jim Denny, who was the administrator, but he was a pastor. He never administrated nursing home in his life. He was pastor. And then I met Fran Kosser, who was the director of social services and activities. And so those three, as well as many others, really were my mentors. They were the people that, because I was only 23 when I went to work there, and never had been in management, you know, really. I'd been working the floor. The year Bob was in his last year of college, I worked ICU, emergency room, in a small hospital down in Laurinburg, North Carolina. That's what I did right out of nursing school. I did that, and I enjoyed it, but I really wanted to do long-term care. So while Bob was in the Navy, I went to work at Wesleyan Arms. And so I was there 10 years. And so during those 10 years, that's when I got the administrator's license. And during those 10 years, I grew up a lot. I grew up a lot from just being a young woman right out of nursing school. And I had three children during all that period of time as well. And those three people, and there were many other people, but they mentored me in terms of leadership. I think about Mr. Denny particularly. One, of course, Ms. Kosser, I could go on forever about Ms. Kosser, but Mr. Denny one time said, "You know, Ms. Wood, I think you're going to make a really good manager someday." I said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Yes." He says, "There's only just one thing I think you need to really work on." And I said, "Oh, what's that?" And he says, "Tact. I think you need to learn how to be more tactful." And I was just like, oh, okay. But I took it like, as you know, it was constructive feedback, right? Because, you know, young people sometimes can just blurt things right out and say
it out.
So he was kind of like teaching me, you know, along the way, how to be tactful. And I think the other thing was watching him and watching Mrs. Kosser, observing them and participating with them in conversations with families and participating in all kinds of meetings with staff members and just watching their technique of how they listened and how they responded. And they were always fair and kind and considerate, always wanted to do the right thing. That was a huge impact on me.
And I know you maintained a lifelong relationship with Mrs. Kosser and with Linda Howard.
Yes, I did. I did. Ms. Kosser lived to be 94. And both of her daughters subsequently had passed away. So Linda and I together took care of her in her last years. We took care of her. She actually resided in a center that Linda operated there in Gastonia, North Carolina, and we helped care for her. Ms. Kosser was just a phenomenal woman of faith. Also, though, was a phenomenal administrator. She also got her administrator's license. She went back to school when she was 50 and got her bachelor's in social work and then got her administrator's license. She was just a remarkable woman. But she and I, one time we went over to talk to a lady who was in the assisted living, and she was so angry, you know, somebody had moved her grandfather's clock or moved her couch or whatever. She was very angry. And so I'm trailing along behind Ms. Kosser, and I said to Ms. Kosser, "Well, what are we going to say? What are we going to do?" And she went, "Just listen. We're just going to listen." And I said, oh, okay, that's fine. And so when we get over there and we're sitting down and the lady's just ranting at us, both of us, and we're both just sitting there with our hands crossed. And I have a tendency, I want to say something. So I start leaning forward, like I want to say something. And Miss Kaiser would gently put her hand over on my knee, like, sit back. We're just listening. And that was, I was like, oh, okay. So then I'd sit back. And then when the lady just finished everything, Miss Kaiser just as calmly, I can just hear as Grace, she says, okay, do you feel better now? And I was like, I can't believe you just did that. And the lady kind of went, well, yes, I do. And I just remember all those little incidences like that, where Miss Conjure would just let the person spew, and just we had one family member, and she would literally walk over to the wall and put her nose up against the wall because she didn't want to look at us. She really had a lot of mental issues. She would just rant and rave. And this counselor and I'd be standing there watching her with her nose up against the wall, like just talking. And I'd look at Miss Counselor like, what are we doing? And Miss Counselor would just go, we're listening. We're listening. And I'm like, so she was a wonderful listener. She, like I say, she taught me many things about God. When I would have a distressful day, my first go-to was give Miss Counselor a call. And she would listen so intently. And then she'd go, okay, now we're going to pray. We're going to pray because that's the person that's going to help us the most. And so I miss her. I miss her. But she told me the last time I saw her that when I came over the river, she would be standing there waving at me. She'd be the first one waving at me. So I'm looking forward to that day.
I love that. I love that. So, Mrs. Kaiser and Mr. Denning and Linda really prepared you for leadership, even though you didn't know you were being prepared.
Exactly. I mean, I had no idea. I mean, during those years, because those were the years prior to the gentleman that I worked for that sold the business and we moved to Florida. So all those 10 years were really prep work, preparing me for the move to Florida and then ultimately then moving into a corporate world. Because see, all those years in High Point were with nonprofit church related, which was totally different than when you go to work for a Meridian or a Genesis. That's shareholders and corporate earnings. And so that was another learning experience for me.
What do you think prepared you to create a leadership team? Because at Opus, the leadership team shared your belief in the mission and shared your belief in making the company the best it could be. Because those are both things that I think are competitive differentials. So in those early years, what seeds were planted that enabled you to do that?
Well, I mean, in the early days, before we started Opus, I knew a lot of those people, like Mary Huss and Pam and Paula and Suzanne. I could just go down the list. Diana Carson. All of those people were in different roles, working in different roles and with Genesis, right? And so I knew them all, and they all knew me. I was like one of them, I was a regional director, but I came into the centers, and so I knew them all. And I identified early on through working with them that they had the same mindset that I had. They wanted to do the best job they could do. They wanted to care for people in the best way. I mean, you think about Mary Huss. Mary Huss got a de she got her degree in geriatric, administration. I mean, so you say about Mary, she loved it. I mean, she has a wonderful story as well about her upbringing and working in nursing homes and working with the nuns and the Catholic centers in New Jersey. I mean, she has a wonderful story. So, see, she brought to the table, and she was my chief operating officer, right? She brought to the table the same desire that I had in terms of caring for people. So did Pam Karubi, so did Suzanne Foxcroft, so did Paula, I mean, just I mean, I could just name them all, and so when we were got ready to put Opus together, this is what I say to people. I didn't really, I told you, I didn't want to do this. I really didn't want to do this. But I looked around and I saw the Marys and the Suzannes and the Pams and all and Diana Carson and all those people, Jen Zakowski. Oh, I could forget Jen, and all those people that I had worked with for all those years in Genesis who had the same platform and standards that I possessed, right? So I said, wow, wouldn't this be a wonderful opportunity to put all these people together in one organization? What kind of energy, what kind of passion would exist, you know, if we're all like on the same plane? So I really, that was a driving force for me, is the fact that all those people that had worked with Genesis all those years, and they wanted to stay together. They did want to stay together. And I thought that would just be a combination, just the perfect storm, right? It was just like the perfect storm, because we had this huge opportunity for all of these really talented, industrious, committed to the end, dedicated people to start an organization like we had. It was a once in a lifetime. That's how I look at it. It was a once in a lifetime, just, you know, kind of just a wonderful, wonderful expression of God's love and his willingness to allow us to do that. I just can't go on and on enough. It wasn't me. It truly wasn't me. It was all the people and all of our same coming together under that umbrella and that mission to get it done. I mean, when we'd have a problem, it was all hands on deck.
Yep.
Nobody was, there wasn't even like a whisper. I mean, nobody even resisted. It was all hands on deck. I'll go, you go, I'm here, you're there, I'll do this, I'll do that. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a more committed staff than I had. I mean, they were the best. During COVID, these were some, I say that COVID was probably the darkest days of my whole career. But again, they were not dark because of I didn't have a staff underneath me that just undergirded me. And that was my biggest, biggest regret, I guess, was that I had to walk away from them. But I loved them. They were great.
Yeah. We got to talk more. So I want to invite you back, because I want to talk about the journey, the specifics of leading Genesis to Opus. I want to talk about the supporters and the detractors, because there are always detractors. Will you come back so we can talk about that?
Sure, of course you know. Well, I'll do anything for you, Joanne. Anything.
Well, thank you for sharing so much of your story, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it as well. I hope it's helpful to others.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Seriously, I am sure that it will be. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.